broadcasting from Cincinnati.
You're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta. I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robert, and we have a great show for you today. And as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. And today we're going to talk about Frank Bruno making a comeback at 54 years old. 54! You kidding me? Floyd Mayweather. Go ahead.
The only 54 that's famous is Studio 54.
That's right, that's right. Been there many times. Floyd Mayweather dropping $3.5 million on a car. We'll talk about that. Our history lesson goes all the way back to 1997 with Oliver McCall versus Lennox Lewis, number two.
One of the most bizarre fights you'll ever witness.
Absolutely bizarre. We also have our semifinal for our lightweight tournament, Pernell Whitaker versus Shane Mosley. We'll also have a Super Bowl preview for you. But first, we get started with this weekend's action, Sergey Kovalev versus Jean Pascal. This was a grudge match, man. Neither one of these guys liked each other. There was a lot of bad blood leading into this. There was a lot of bad blood at the weigh-ins and stuff like that. Jean Pascal for months now has been accusing Sergey Kovalev of being a racist and everything like that. He then, at one of the pressers or whatever, talked to John David Jackson and basically said, you know, you're a hypocrite for training this guy and this and that, stand up for black people and this. I mean, it got ugly. It got real ugly. But all that pales in a comparison to what happened to the ring on Saturday, because it got ugly
in
there,
too. Well, and not only that, it even got more ugly after the fight.
Right. You know, this was, so we knew it was going to be contentious and everything like that. This was as one-sided a fight as you can get. You know, I tell you what, we talked about this, we touched on this prior to coming on the air today, and we talked about Pascal, you know, they had already fought. These two had already fought, and it was pretty decisive the first time. It was a knockout. So you don't get more decisive than that. You know, so what are you going to change up? Can he change anything? Can he do anything? You know, and based on Pascal's last performance against Gonzalez, this fight shouldn't have happened. If anybody slipped from that fight, it was definitely Pascal.
You know, to be honest with you,
Gonzalez, yeah.
Uniesky Gonzalez should have been the one fighting Kovalev on Saturday night.
I thought so, too.
Now, granted, the result might have turned out to be the same way, but I would much rather see a guy who actually beat the guy that was in the ring with him the last time get the so-called tune-up shot here. And I thought, you know who I really felt bad for is Freddie Roach. Because, Freddie took on this guy, and at the end of the, at the end of the fifth round, he said, "Look, John, you can't take any more of this. I'm going to stop this right now." And John basically begged him to give him one more round, and it didn't do any good. I really felt bad for Freddie because, see, if you're with the trainer on a full-time basis and he knows your fighting style and he knows what you can deal with and what you can't, you know, then he can make those kind of decisions. But when Freddie Roach, who has been in the business all of his life, when he could see that his fighter couldn't do anything and he wanted to stop the fight, Freddie should have went ahead and stopped it because that's who I really felt bad for here in this situation.
He gave him a fair chance, though. I mean, yeah. I think he did what he did was right, sending him out there that next round or whatever. I think that was fine. I don't have any problem with that.
I don't have a problem with it. But, see, had Pascal been with his normal trainer and his normal trainer said the same thing, there probably would have been no issue. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you wonder, yeah. I mean, you know, look, I mean, everybody made a big deal about Freddie Roach coming in here. How much difference is he going to make in 8 weeks?
Seriously. Well,
the guy Pascal has been fighting for a long time, a seasoned professional. He's on the tail end of his career. I mean, he didn't show much in his last fight. He clearly didn't show much this fight. He should really probably hang him up, to be honest with
That's
you.
That's right, yep.
But, you know, man, I mean, the guy's got, you know, 30-some-odd fights in here. 34 yeah. fights, I guess,
yep.
coming into the fight.
Yeah,
34
so.
Fights, you know. Look, man, I mean, there's very little Roach is going to be able to show you. Number one, in 8 weeks or less.
Well,
and what
you
is
know,
he going to do to capitalize on your style? Nothing. He can't do anything.
Probably those that suggested that he went to Freddie Roach were probably drinking the Miguel Cotto Kool-Aid because, you know, Freddie Roach made Cotto look so well, but what they don't realize is that was good matchmaking. That wasn't Freddie Roach's work, you know. But no, Pascal, he's done. Stick a fork in him. This was pathetic. And, boy, Kovalev, for those that don't know, it was an 8th-round stoppage, wasn't it, Eric? Or was it 7?
Yeah, it was after 7 rounds they stopped the fight. Yeah, Pascal,
yeah.
Kovalev, in that first round, man, I tell you what, Kovalev dropped him with that shotgun jab in the first round, and that was ruled a slip. I don't know what that ref was looking at, man, because that was clear as day to me. I was shocked. I mean, the replay showed it, everything showed. I mean, that was clear as day to me. That was a shotgun jab.
Yep.
Put him on his mm-hmm. back, man.
Yeah, absolutely. No, but no, yeah. And boy, you could tell this was personal because normally when Kovalev gives an interview, he's very nice, very calm, and, you know, answers the questions, but he boldly made it a point. He said, look, I'm unhappy with the stoppage. I wanted to beat the crap out of this guy. I wanted him to suffer for 12 rounds, you know? He even said that he wanted to fight the chicken. Did you see that? Did you hear that? He wanted to.
I did. We'll touch on that here in a minute,
yeah,
man. But I tell you, you know, he really, like I said, wanted to punish him. But, you know, hey, give Pascal credit, man. He hung in there. He couldn't put him away. You know, I know he tried.
Yeah.
Don't tell me he didn't try. I know he tried. He tried to put him away, but he couldn't do it, man.
I know.
Ultimately, it had to get stopped or whatever. But, you know, he didn't, you know, he wanted him out cold. You know what I mean? He wanted that kind of knockout. And he couldn't do it, man. So everybody was talking, man. And this is what bugs me about Max Kellerman and the HBO staff, because I think it was Max Kellerman who said that Kovalev seems to be getting better. His boxing seems to be getting better. And, you know,
That was Kellerman
he's
that said that.
Such a homer, man. Because you know he doesn't feel that way. You know, like, if you get him out in the public or whatever, he's going to say something different.
Yep.
It's like he's just HBO's lapdog anymore. You know, and I'm not saying Kovalev's not a good boxer, but how can you say that Kovalev is getting better based off this performance? That guy, let me tell you what, Pascal, you know, he's not a shot fighter, but he's clearly past his prime, put it that way. And how could you say that he did better, you know, that you know, he's getting better off of this performance right here? And he had a dead man in the ring for 6 rounds, you know, 6-7 rounds over here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on, man, really? That's not to say he didn't put in. He did exactly what he should have done, but you can't tell me, you can't sit here and tell me that, you know, oh, well, he's, you know, this and that, or he's, you know, come on, man.
Yeah. No, it's pretty pathetic. That's why I miss Larry Merchant, man. I know he's in his 80s, but Larry didn't try to sell you something. When Larry was at ringside, he basically talked about the fights, how good or how bad they were. He didn't try to snow job you and say, oh, he looks fantastic, this is great, you know.
That's
Larry
what I love, you know, like, yeah, it's like with Kellerman, man, he used to be really good about that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he used to tell you exactly what he thought of the fighters. He used to tell you exactly. Now it's like, you know, a big fluff job for HBO or whatever.
Well,
they take their house fighter and, you know, now all of a sudden, you know, he's invincible, you know.
It's almost like the bigger the paycheck Max gets, the more he's got to kiss the boss's asses kind of thing.
Right. I mean, it's like, just tell it like it is. I mean, there's no way. I mean, and when he said that, I'm like, how can you base that off of this performance? I mean, off of this level of opposition. You know what I mean? Because he had a good performance in the sense that he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He was never in trouble, you know, and he just kind of demolished the guy, you know.
Well, this was basically a title defense that was already won before he stepped into the ring.
Right. Well, you know, that's true. And, like, I don't know. Like, I mean, how, you know, based on his last – here's my thing, and we talked about this too, man. Like, how do you off the fight with Gonzalez, you know, Inesky Gonzalez, off of that fight, how do you take that fight and say, yeah, I want to see Pascal Kovalev too? How do you do that?
Well, you know what I mean? What I didn't know, Eric, is when they fought the first time, there was a rematch clause in the contract, and what Pascal did is exercise that. That's how this fight got made. So
I think that's crazy. It doesn't even had a rematch clause in it.
Yeah.
You know.
So, you know, I don't know who Pascal's promoter is, but that's how this fight was made. He exercised his rematch clause.
Yeah, and I mean it. You know, and good for him. He got a big. I'm sure he got a good payday for this fight.
Right.
I don't want to see him again, though.
No, he's done.
I hope so too. I hope he, you know, takes a paycheck and you know, goes ahead. But I don't see that happening. I don't know. I mean, and I heard rumors. I mean, I don't know how true they were or whatever. But, you know, you heard rumblings from coming from Freddie Roach's camp and stuff like that, saying that, you know, he wasn't real, you know, not necessarily, Freddie didn't seem too confident, put it that way.
No, and well, hey, when have you ever heard Freddie Roach say, if you don't do what I tell you to do, I'm going to leave you alone in the corner and you're going to do everything yourself.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That was a bit, yeah, that was one of his, yeah. And I had heard that all leading into this fight, that Pascal's kind of like his own man. He wants to do this and that. He does things his way. And, you know, and that's okay and everything. But, I mean, no matter what trainer you go to, they're not going to help you. I didn't think that Roach was a good fit for him anyway. It's not really Roach's style of fighter, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, Freddie got a nice payday out of it. He can go back to training Manny Pacquiao and the rest of his stable.
You know, ironically enough, you know who's a good, you know who would be a good trainer for Pascal is John David Jackson. I think that's a good fit right there. Unfortunately, he trains Kovalev, so that ain't going to work, you know?
Yeah, no, are you kidding? He's not going to give up the recognized light heavyweight champion
right,
of the world.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about after the fight, man. They're interviewing Kovalev, and then Kovalev, they asked him who he wants to fight next, and he says he mentioned
Chickenson.
Ward's names, and then he mentioned Adonis Chickenson, which is his slang for Adonis Stevenson, the lineal champion.
Yeah.
And then, that didn't sit too well with Stevenson, who was in the ring. I don't know who decided to let him in the ring, but it wasn't a good idea. They let him in the ring, and then he grabbed the microphone and said, I'm the real champion, and then just chaos kind of ensued. No punches or anything. The two men were separated, but it was a lot of fun to watch.
Well, look, that is – I don't know if it will ever happen, Eric, but that is the light heavyweight fight that needs to happen.
Hey, listen, man, here it is. Adonis Stevenson took to Twitter after the fight, said they offered Kovalev 50-50, a 50-50 split. His network pays him. Adonis's network pays him. We can have the fight. You can have the fight where, you know, I don't know where they wanted to have the fight or whatever, but it's just, you know, that was the deal.
Yeah.
And
well, that sounds like a good deal to
me. Like, they have been very, let me tell you what, man, Adonis Stevenson and his people have been very reasonable with trying to make this fight.
I go back to blaming the Eddie Hearn of American boxing, Kathy Duva.
Yeah. Yeah, because they from everything I've heard, we talked to Kathy Duva's people. And remember, when we asked them, they're the ones they wanted the purse bid. They got the purse bid and then immediately pulled out. They said go to the WBC. Let's get a purse bid. Let's get this fight going. They pulled out immediately once it went to purse bid. Adonis Stevenson, the PBC, they offered him to fight on free TV. And they were saying that he would have made more money. Kovalev would have made more money than he had made for his last like five or six fights.
Look, I know Kovalev is contractually obligated to fight Ward. I guess towards the end of the year, but his next fight should be without question Adonis Stevenson.
You want to sell the Ward fight? Yeah, go ahead and undisputed, man. Yeah,
now you might, because of the two networks, Eric. I hate to say this, but because of the two networks involved, you might have to put this thing on pay-per-view. And we know it's not pay-per-view worthy, but that might be the only way that this fight gets made.
You know, I tell you, man, I don't care. I'd like to see it. I mean, I think Kovalev walks that fight. I don't think it's
Sergey Kovalev is the Triple G of the light heavyweight division. There is not a light heavyweight fighter who's going to give him serious issues.
He's a bad man, that's for sure, man.
I mean, the PBC has got good fighters like Better Beeb and Andrew Fonfora and several other decent guys, but Sergey Kovalev is going to walk all of those guys. He's the beast of that division. But to make it financially palatable for everybody involved, you might have to stick this on pay-per-view. Do I think it's pay-per-view worthy? Hell no, I don't. But I think that's the only way that this fight gets made. And it's a shame, because Kovalev beats the holy daylights out of Adonis Stevenson.
Well, and the funny thing is, man, like I said, man, with Adonis Stevenson, he's done, I mean, it sounds to me, now whether it is or isn't, but like I said, we've talked to Top Rank before, and when they gave us the excuse of why they pulled out and everything like that, you know, it didn't really sound all that great.
Main events, I'm sorry.
That's, yeah. You're right. Yeah. It didn't sound all that great, you know what I
right.
mean, on why they pulled out. It was kind of like a half kind of excuse, you know.
Yeah.
And but Adonis Stevenson is going around saying, hey, we offer him this, we offer him that. His people are saying, his people from Jim or whatever, that promotional company he works with, they said the same thing, that, you know, they offered him. I mean, and I have no reason to not believe it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, all the stuff he's going on Twitter saying and all the stuff that, his companies are saying, I have no reason to believe it. That contract, the thing is, the long and short is, they're just not going to fight off of HBO. That's it.
Well, look, now remember, there's a new guy in charge of HBO now. This will be his first big test to see if he's willing to work with Al Heyman and the PBC.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, is Adonis Stevenson contractually obligated to Showtime?
Yes,
some of those
is.
PBC fighters are not contractually obligated to Showtime, I wouldn't think. I don't know,
yeah.
But I wouldn't think. You know, Arthur Beterbiev, great example. I mean, he's another one that you know, it looks like the crusher in a lot of ways, you know what I mean? He's a very good fighter, but he's an up-and-comer. He's not as seasoned yet. He still needs a little bit more work, you know what I mean?
Right. Arthur Beterbiev is the Anthony Joshua of that division.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, it's a very good call. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely an up-and-comer. But, yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, it's just silly to talk about, you know, and then immediately afterwards the guy's on HBO saying, you know, well, you know, he has to cross the lines, the contract lines, and he's not willing to do that.
Jim Lampley made it a point to say that. It's like, oh, come on, Jim.
Seriously.
You know?
Yeah, right? Come on, man. I think the fight can happen. It's just a matter of do they want it to happen. Look, again, man, if I were, you know, I would do anything to make that fight happen. Make the fight happen, make Sergey Kovalev the lineal champ, and then the title stays with HBO. Then you got him fighting Ward. You know what I mean? It's just, it's silly not to.
Look at it this way. You have Kovalev and Stevenson fight in June, because that's the date that everybody's been talking about. Then you have Ward and Kovalev fight in either October or November, because we know that Canelo has May and September, you know, set up. And Ward says he wants two more fights. He's going to get one in March. So you give him one in March, and then you give him another one, like in June.
Yeah.
Like maybe you put him on the undercard of the Stevenson-Kovalev thing. And then by October or November, that'll be the way to wrap up the year. And if Kovalev beats Pascal, Stevenson, and Ward, in the same calendar year, that puts him in line for possible Fighter of the Year honors.
Yeah, it does. The problem is that it's not going to happen. He's not going to beat Ward. I mean, he's not going to come close to beating Ward. Everybody is hyping this guy up to be a monster, and he's a very, very good fighter, and he's a killer. He is a killer fighter, man, no question.
I have to see more out of Andre Ward than being out of the ring. Okay.
You know, again, man, until somebody beats Ward, I don't believe it can be done. You know what
okay.
I mean? It's one of those things because, to me, he's too good of a boxer. And Kovalev's a good boxer, too. I mean, they're both at the top of their game. Ward's just a better boxer. You're talking about a guy who hasn't lost since he's 12. He's 12 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's hard to beat. You know, he's seen every style imaginable. You know, I mean, with the Olympics and his international experience, he's seen every style imaginable. And no one has come close to beating him. The only person that you could argue even came close was Darnell Boone, and that was like in, what, his eighth pro fight or ninth pro fight or something crazy where Boone knocked him down. Boone beats every Boone is, you know, Boone gives everybody a hard time.
Yeah.
He gave Kovalev a hard time.
Yep, he sure did.
You know, before Kovalev came back in the rematch.
Matter of fact, I think that was the first fight that Kovalev worked with John David Jackson was the Darnell Boone fight.
Yeah,
you know?
That second fight. It was. I think it was that second fight, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Darnell Boone gives every. He's the best fighter nobody's ever heard of, man. He has fought everyone.
That's because he's known as a journeyman. He's got as many wins as he does losses.
Yeah, he's. I tell you what, man, I wouldn't want to meet him in a ring, man. That's a tough, tough guy right there.
Yeah. But no, I hope that because legitimately, that's the only fight for Kovalev. Unify the title, and that way, you know. That way, when him and Ward meet, I mean, you know that fight's going to be on pay-per-view. That's something you can market. The undisputed light heavyweight champion of the world,
yeah.
You know?
I mean, undisputed. Lineal undisputed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's a great thing, man. I don't know. Like I said, man, hopefully they get off and try to work with it and try to get this done, man. I mean, say what you want, man. Adonis Stevenson is trying to get it done, and Jim Lampley can go on there all he wants and say, well, he's not willing to do this, and he's with the other company or whatever the case may be. Look, he's trying to make the fight.
We're going to find out what kind of executive Peter Nelson is now at
no
HBO.
Doubt.
This is going to be his first real test at seeing how well he can negotiate with the other side.
Right. Yeah, this will be really interesting to see if they can get Heyman back on board and everything like that. It's interesting, man, because, you know, it's a tough thing, man, because they got Showtime there. You know, you don't know. But again, look, I go back to if you can put fights on CBS and ABC and or CBS and NBC or whatever the case may be.
And now Fox and all that, yeah.
Why can't you just do them on those two also? I mean, this guy, you know.
Yeah, I know. They've got multiple options. Let's see them get at the negotiating table and get it done.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? But neither one of those guys should have another fight until they fight each other.
Yeah, Stevenson, who's he? He's got to fight somebody next, too, man. I mean, I haven't seen him in a while either, so.
No.
All right, let's talk about the undercard here. Kareem Mayfield. Kareem Mayfield, if you remember, was in the running with Andre Berto to become Floyd Mayweather's next
last
guy.
Opponent,
the last opponent, yeah. Quote-unquote last opponent. But Kareem Mayfield didn't get the nod. Andre Berto did. So he winds up fighting Dmitry Mykolyenko.
Yep.
So.
And according to our wonderful guy, Steve Kim, he said last week on the next round, he said, the promoter for Mykolyenko, and I don't know who that is, went through 36 names. They called 36 fighters. Tried to get somebody to fight this Russian, and Kareem Mayfield was the only one that was currently in the gym, only one working out, and was the only one that was willing to take the fight. I find that extremely hard to believe. How can you go through 36 names before you can find somebody to fight somebody? I mean, I'd never seen this kid before, but when I heard that story, I'm thinking, oh my God, is he a killer or something?
Yeah, you know? He didn't turn out to be just that, man. I tell you, I was surprised too. Because Kareem Mayfield's a good fighter, man. He really is. He's a good fighter. He's not really on the league of like Mayweather or anything.
No,
neither is Berto either. And I actually think he's a step below Berto too, man. That's just my, you know.
Yeah.
But I tell you, Dmitry the Mechanic Mikulenko. He looked pretty good. I mean, he looked pretty good. He's a pressure fighter. For those of you who haven't seen him before, and if you didn't catch this one, he's a very pressure fighter. You know, he's very just comes forward, throws some punches, you know, and just really kind of kept Mayfield not necessarily off balance, but just his work rate. You know, and his conditioning, you know, you kind of wonder, you know, and Mayfield said he was in the gym and everything like that. You kind of wonder how, you know, because he looked dead in that fight right around the fifth round.
Yep.
He was taking some shots, and it wasn't, and again, I don't even think it was anything that Mikulenko was doing to him, to be honest with you. It's not like he was putting in heavy, heavy, heavy shots, you know. I mean, he was hitting him, he was touching him up, but it wasn't like...
Look,
you know,
the Russian looked good, and he looked impressive against who he was fighting against, but he only has 9 knockouts in 21 fights now.
Right.
I don't know what kind of threat he can be at 140 pounds.
Well, I mean, again, I mean, that pressure wore him down. And Mayfield knows how to survive. He's a good pro. He's a good fighter.
Yeah, right. But no, he did what he's supposed to do, but no offense to Kareem, but I'd like to see this guy against somebody else who's actually in full fighting shape, who had a full 8 weeks to prepare, and I want to see what this guy can bring to the table.
Yeah, the scores in this fight, I mean, real lopsided. He won every round, 190 on two, and then 99-91 on the other one. Mikulenko with the win claimed the vacant USBA title. I'm like you. I want to see somebody with a full training camp fight Mikulenko, and see kind of what he has. You know, I mean, and see or fight maybe a slicker guy and see how they handle that pressure coming forward.
Thomas Dorme, for example.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and see how they handle that pressure coming forward, you know, and see if he's able to adjust and everything like that. Now, Kareem Mayfield, I want to see him fight again, but I want to see him completely just dismantle his corner, because they did one of the worst jobs. I could put them up for train wreck of the week, to be honest with you. They did one of the worst jobs I've ever seen in a corner. They offered up no advice on how to beat this guy.
And why Kareem left Virgil Hunter, I'll never know.
Because that was just dumb, man. Virgil Hunter is a great trainer, man.
Because around here in Northern California, because Kareem is from San Francisco, Virgil Hunter is the best trainer in this area.
Yeah.
And he basically got a no-name trainer in there and who did crappy work.
He absolutely did. I mean, I tell you what, and I don't know if this is the guy's regular trainer or what, but, you know, when he came back to the corner, and I think this was right around the fifth round or something like that, his trainer looked at him and said, "You need to outthink this guy." Are you stupid? What kind of advice is that?
Yeah, really.
What exactly? I mean, you know, not the guy's coming at you, cut some angles, turn him, throw the jab, keep this guy off balance. Nothing like that. No advice like that. Not lead with this hand or any. Outthink this guy. Come on, man. You got it. You got to come on. You got to pick it up. You know, start throwing some punches. You know, those were. I mean, that literally is the instruction he was given in there. That's not going to help him.
No, hey,
you can't
Kareem,
make adjustments like that.
Kareem, go back to Virgil, okay?
I would.
Yeah.
I would, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of trainers out there, man. Go find yourself a good one, man.
Go back to Virgil. You're in good hands, so there you go.
Yeah, Virgil Hunter, man. I'm surprised he left him. I wonder if I wonder if Hunter got rid of him or he left him. You know what I mean?
We don't know, so, you know.
Yeah, so that may not be an option going back. But, I mean, you know, that corner was terrible, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they offered up, no instruction.
I mean, hell, I could see Kareem going to Freddie Roach, you know.
Somebody. I mean, just somebody. I mean, somebody who's going to give you instruction. Doesn't even have to be a named trainer. Just have to be somebody who's going to know something about it and can give you instruction in the ring. I could have gave him more instruction in this corner. Gave him that fight, man.
Yeah. Well, you would have liked the trainer percentage of the purse, that's for sure.
Yeah,
you know?
Right? Yeah, they were there for a paycheck, if anything, man. That was horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible to watch, man. Because I think Kareem is a good fighter. I just think that, you know, taking a fight on short notice like that, you could tell he wasn't in the gym training. Like, I mean, he may have been in the gym, but he wasn't training, you know.
Yeah, and he'd been out of the ring for I don't know how many months. So,
yeah, he'd been out for a while. So, I mean, I think that, you know, that would have been pretty good for him to have a full camp or whatever. I don't know that it would have made a difference, but I think that it would have been a better fight. You know,
yep.
Who knows
yep.
if it would have made a difference? Though, what do you think about Mikko Yanko going forward? I mean, as far as
like I said, I want to see him fight at Thomas Duarte or somebody of that ilk, because I actually want to see what this guy has to offer. I can't really judge him on beating a substitute such as Kareem Mayfield, who wasn't in tip-top shape.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I hope Mayfield, like I said, man, I hope Mayfield guts his corner and comes back with somebody new, because I still think he has something left. You know what I mean? I he showed a lot of heart in the fight, to be honest. I mean, it's a hard thing to sit there and get battered around for 10 rounds, but
I still showed
some heart, man.
You never know. Floyd may be impressed with his performance and say, "Oh, okay, you're my 50th fight. Let's go."
Mayfield, yeah, I know,
yeah.
Right? I can't believe. I mean, I like Mayfield a lot, man. I do. Like I said, I think he's a good fighter. That being said, I can't believe he was actually in the running to fight Mayweather. Are you serious?
No.
Seriously,
no.
Dude? Come on, man.
And I agree with the guys on HBO. Maybe Floyd was trying to, you know, pump up the guy's career or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know. But
and
no,
if he was, hey, you know what, good for Floyd. And he's trying to get the guy a payday, hey, good for Floyd,
yeah,
you know.
I mean,
that's a nice thing to do.
I mean, Floyd likes to give away his money. We'll talk about that here in a little bit.
Right.
But, you know,
yeah, right.
You know. So there you go.
Now, on Bounce TV on Sunday, Erickson Lubin fought Jose de Jesus Macias. All right, so I didn't actually catch this one, man. I know you didn't either because you don't have Bounce TV, but Bounce TV actually streams over the internet. The problem is that a lot of people were complaining that that stream went out. I'm one of them. That stream, I couldn't get the stream. There was some problems with the stream or whatever, with Bounce TV or whatever the case may have been. So I didn't get to see it, but I did read about it. It was a lopsided decision in favor of Erickson Lubin. He won it, I think, won just about every round.
Yep.
He knocked Macias down in the fifth round and largely controlled the fight throughout. So he continues his winning ways. Also, too, across the pond, George Groves fought this weekend. He fought Andrea De Luisa and won via fifth round TKO.
Good deal.
And also, too, Robert's boy, Zhu Shiming, Robert's favorite fighter, fought
not really
this weekend. He hates Shiming.
I'd like to put Shiming in his Chocolatito, and let's see how good Shiming is.
How dare you, sir. All right, so let's talk about the upcoming fights. That was pretty much it for this weekend. We'll talk about the upcoming fights here. And
good luck with that.
Right, exactly. Friday, February 5th, on Robbie's favorite channel, Estrella TV, or ringtv.com.
Yeah.
Randy Caballero versus Ruben Garcia, 10 rounds, junior featherweights. And then, let's see here, Frankie Gomez versus Silverio Ortiz, 10 rounds, welterweights. So, yeah, that's it.
And,
yeah, I'm looking at this and looking at it. There's nothing there. February 9th on the Tuesday, we have PBC on Fox 1. Jamel Herring, this should be a good one. Jamel Herring versus Luis Eduardo Flores, 10 rounds, lightweights. And then Alex Martin versus Rosenberth Gomez, 8 rounds, welterweights.
And we'll remind you of that next week.
Yeah,
because next week we should have some more to talk about. As far as upcoming fights, I hope.
Well, you know, and HBO didn't have anything going on until the 27th, I believe.
No, I know Showtime's got a show box coming up. I think, what is it?
The
19th or something.
Something like that.
You know.
Yeah, Showtime's got a show box on the 19th.
Yeah, and then both on the 27th, both HBO and Showtime have cards. So, matter of fact, Showtime has two cards that day. They have the Frampton-Quigg fight in the afternoon, and then at nighttime they have a card with Leo Santa Cruz. And then that's the same night that Terrence Crawford will be fighting on HBO. So.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And then, I was scrolling through the schedule. This caught my eye. This is beautiful. Having Oscar De La Hoya as your uncle or whatever it is. Maybe I don't know.
What did he do to poor Diego now?
February 19th in L.A. on Estrella TV. On Estrella TV. Wasn't even on Ring TV. Diego De La Hoya versus Arturo Badia. 10 rounds, junior featherweights. That's on February 19th. But it just struck me as he's on Australia TV. He's not on. I mean, like, put this guy on TV, man.
Do you hate your nephew?
Seriously.
What's the deal here? You know, I mean, he's a good fighter. You know?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good, real good prospect, you know. I mean, it just, man, look at De La Hoya showing no love to him.
I mean, treat your family better, okay? Come on.
Oscar said, I had to earn it the hard way, son. You're going to do the same.
Yeah, Oscar was on TV every fight. Come on.
he sure was, wasn't he? Every fight, every one of his fights you could probably find. There's maybe like a handful.
Yeah.
There's like a handful that you can't, you know. But, yeah, just about every fight, man. That guy came out, was a millionaire, son.
Oscar De La Hoya is being the Marlon Brando of boxing here, treating his nephew like, okay, I'm the godfather. You're going to do it my way.
That's it,
you know?
Man.
Jeez. The schedule is pretty weak this week. And
yeah.
There's an obvious reason for it, which we'll get to at the end of the show.
There you go. All right,
let's
move on to our history lesson this week, man. February 7th, 1997, Oliver, the Atomic Bull. What a name. So I'm going to start calling myself the Atomic Bull. Oliver McCall versus Lennox Lewis. This is their second fight. Now, these two met 2.5 years earlier, with Oliver McCall winning by KO or TKO in the second round. There was some controversy, as Lewis claimed the fight was stopped early, and Ed said McCall just got lucky. Lewis offered McCall $10 million for the rematch, but McCall said no. He said he didn't like the way Lewis disrespected him.
Okay.
You mean Don King didn't like the way Lewis disrespected him? Because, Don King and he was Oliver McCall's guy, so, yeah, he's not letting that belt go back. You know, I can just imagine.
Right.
I can only imagine Don King on that limo ride over there on the way home. $10 million, I'm going to take it. And then Don King interjects, no, we're not. We're going to go here. So, let me say there was no immediate rematch. Oliver McCall went on to fight Larry Holmes, just got by Holmes, 45-year-old Holmes, just got by him, and then fought Frank Bruno, who we'll talk about later also.
Yep.
And lost it then. Fast forward 2.5 years, the two would meet again for the vacant WBC heavyweight title.
Yep.
During the fight, this was one of the strangest things I've ever seen in a prize fight, man. Oliver McCall, in their first fight, came into the ring in their first one and almost looked like he was crying in the ring. You know? I mean, this was nothing new for him. And then the second fight, he was just off. There was something wrong. You could tell there was something wrong. Lewis was able to control the first three rounds with his jab, like he always does, man. Lewis had an amazing jab. And landing strong right hands, occasionally drop that right on him, McCall, meanwhile, offered up very little offense. He landed 26 punches through the course of the fight. 26.
That's
McCall
pretty
landed
bad.
26 punches, right. After the third round ended, McCall refused to go back to his corner, ignoring, Greg Page, his trainer, saying, hey, come back here, we got to give you some, And then, he just walked around the ring. Just walked around back and forth till the round began. As the fourth round began, Lewis landed a right hook on the side of McCall's head and followed him up with a right-left combination that just missed. McCall then dropped his gloves, backed away from Lewis into the ropes. Lewis approached him. McCall turned his back and began walking around the ring. Lewis attempted to engage him several times, but McCall refused to fight back and spent the entire round walking around the ring and simply covering up when Lewis approached him, while not landing a single punch. Didn't throw one, didn't land one. After the round ended, McCall again refused to return to his corner and continued to walk around the ring. Eventually, Mills Lane took McCall, who was now crying. He broke down and started crying, to his corner. Lane in McCall's corner questioned whether McCall wanted to, continue to fight. They asked him, hey, do you want to continue? He said, yeah, let's do it. The fifth round began. McCall continued to just do the same thing he was doing, and Lewis now starting to land several, power shots now.
Yeah.
McCall again turned his back, began to walk away. Lane stepped in between the two fighters and stopped the fight, awarding Lewis the fight by TKO. He literally had a nervous breakdown in the ring.
Yeah,
it was unbelievable.
Mills Lane said it was one of the strangest things he'd ever experienced. That's why it took him so long to stop it. He'd never seen a fighter do that before. It's like, hey, what am I supposed to do with this? You know?
And it's not a rule that you have to go back to your corner, I guess. I mean, he was walking around the ring. I mean, he didn't go into Lewis's corner, but he was walking around his side, minding his own business. You know, Greg Page trying to get him back to the corner to give him some instructions and water or whatever, man. He just lost it. I mean, he just completely had a breakdown. The following day, McCall attempted to explain his bizarre actions at a news conference. He claimed that his refusal to engage Lewis was a type of rope-a-dope strategy. And explained his crying by saying he had wanted to get himself into an emotional state. You know, Yeah, the Nevada Athletic Convention said, yeah, right, and temporarily suspended McCall and withheld his $3 million purse. And by early April, he was deemed mentally ill and sent to the Virginia Psychiatric Ward. In September of 1997, he was deemed healthy enough to continue boxing. His suspension was lifted, and then he was finally able to collect his purse, you know, minus $250,000.
Right.
That they fined him. But one of the strangest scenes I had ever seen, man, where he just literally had a breakdown in that ring. And let me tell you, man, McCall was Tyson's former sparring partner. And if you know anything about Mike Tyson's history or anything like that, Mike Tyson has a history of KOing sparring partners, knocking them out cold.
Yes, he does.
And I've seen video where Mike Tyson would spar and not even wear headgear. He would just go in there and spar. I mean, or the headgear that he wore was just like, I mean, like a strap. It almost looked like a wrestling headgear, you know?
Right. Yep, that's true.
Unbelievable, man. And I mean, McCall used to be one of his main sparring partners. And I mean, so you know McCall could take a shot. I mean, McCall can take a shot. I mean, I've seen McCall hit with some – so he's been in there with just about any big puncher you can name, man. And he's taken some shots. He's taken shots from all of them. I've never seen him go anywhere.
Nope.
And Lennox Lewis can hit. Man, he can hit, you know, and he's got a punch, man. So – you know, with him unloading on McCall and everything like that, and McCall not really going anywhere. But to watch somebody, it was one of the saddest things you'll ever see, man, to watch somebody have a nervous breakdown right in the middle of the ring like that. That was just...
Yeah, and
like in his corner, you had to just feel so helpless. Because you know that this guy is just like... I really think they probably should have stopped that. You know, they could have stopped at any time. Everything, you know, his corner really should have stepped in and said, look, man, it's done. You know, you're not here to fight. He wasn't there to fight from the get-go, you know. And I think his corner probably should have recognized that in a dressing room.
Right.
You know, but, you know, yeah.
Wow. They all wanted to get paid. That's the problem there.
Right. You know. Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's...
That's one of the major problems in boxing. Even if you know your fighters shouldn't fight, you know, they're not, you know... They're not going to say, hey, you can't fight because there's too much money involved. Everybody wants to get paid.
Yeah. Well, and everybody, you know, let's fast forward to the Pacquiao fight, the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight. Everybody got on Pacquiao when his shoulder was busted, you know, or he said he had a shoulder injury, he found out he had a torn rotator or whatever he had.
Right.
You know, and they were, well, you should have pulled out of the fight. There was a lot of money in it. That's exactly why he didn't pull out of the fight because there was a lot of money
in
it. You know how tough it would have been for him to pull out of that fight?
Well, yeah, it would have been tough, but I still think Manny should have done it.
Not to mention, the opportunity probably wouldn't have come back. You know, I mean, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, you know, to walk away from. Not only for him to walk away from, but how much money is set up already involved in all this.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. It's easier said than done. Like, you or I could say, yeah, there's no way, you know, I would have done it, you know. But... You know, you have, like, you know, a lot of times you have somebody depending on you. You don't want to let that person down.
No.
Imagine you have, like, a whole team of people depending on you. You know, you got family. I mean, it's tough thing, man.
4.4 million suckers.
Yeah, right? Huh. And you and I are two of them anyway.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about a fight that's not going to disappoint.
Okay.
Let's talk about the antithesis of the Mayweather fight. Let's talk about fantasy lightweight tournament, the semifinal. Purnell, Sweet Pea Whitaker versus Sugar Shane Mosley for the right to go to the finals. You know how much is on the line here, Robert? You have any idea what's on the line here? The right to go to the finals. The right to find out who is the best lightweight in history, the right to fight Roberto Duran, the number one seed.
That's right.
That's what's on the line here today.
Yep.
All right. Pernell Whitaker and Shane Mosley. Let's break this down, man. All right, so let's break it down to intangibles here. Chin. Let's do the chin, man. Who do you think has a better chin?
That's a tough one. They both can take shots. Because especially Whitaker, because he's such a great boxer, he doesn't really get hit hard.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would have to give that to I don't know. That's a tough one. I would have to give that to Whitaker, I guess, because they both can take shots, but Whitaker's got the advantage because of his movement. I don't think he really gets hit with solid shots.
Yeah, I see that too, man. But you know, Whitaker's been down a couple times, but you know, I still give him a pass for that. He wasn't in his prime when he was down. He was. I guess Mayweather put him down. I guess if you had to put a gun to my head and say who had the better chin, Whitaker had been down a couple of times.
Yeah,
at 135.
But Pernell, even when he went down, Eric, he was never seriously hurt.
No.
You know.
No, I agree with that.
But
I have it even. I have the chins even. I have because, like I said, I mean, he was never really seriously hurt.
Yep.
And Mosley, I don't even think ever came close to being down at 135.
No.
No way. Now, speed. This is a tough one.
No. I would have to give that to Whitaker because I don't know. I don't remember. I'm sure I have, but I don't remember seeing Mosley fight at 135. But I know Shane was fast, but Whitaker, with that movement, I think his speed was good also.
See, I have this one even as well, because I got, I think Pernell Whitaker is slicker, but I think Shane Mosley is just as fast.
Right.
You know, and I think those two are going to counter off each other. If you're talking about from point A to point B, I think Shane Mosley, but speed is just all around speed. You know what I mean? And I think that Whitaker is slick. His feet were faster than Shane's. Shane's hands may have been faster. I don't know, man. This is even.
I get the feeling that we're building up to a draw here, the way this sounds.
So boxing ability, who do you give this one to?
Without a doubt, the boxing ability, the movement, that goes to Pernell Whitaker. Shane Mosley is not known as a pure boxer. He's known more as a slugger. Yes, he was fast, and he could move it that way, but sweet pea all day.
Yeah, I agree. I've got Whitaker with the boxing ability, definitely, and this was by a good margin because, again, man, Whitaker was just a master boxer, and not that Shane Mosley wasn't a good boxer. He just wasn't in that caliber. You know, he just wasn't, you know. Now, as far as power goes, who do you give the power edge to?
Mosley all day.
Yeah,
Mosley all
too.
Day.
And this was kind of like the boxing ability one, where I gave it to Whitaker with no problems, with just with power. I gave this one to Mosley with no issues. Also,
that's right. Yeah.
All right. So Shane Mosley, to me, was one of the best 135 pounders ever. He was really known as a welterweight because he actually made the jump from 135 to 147.
Yeah, he pulled a Robert Guerrero, but actually was successful.
Right. Right. Exactly. You know. And then, only a handful of boxers have actually done that. You know, I mean, from making that jump from 135 to 147 and skipping over that 140 mark, I mean, making that jump from lightweight to welterweight's a big jump, you know, and only a handful of people have done that. Yeah. And, and even though he was known at 147, I still think 135 was his actual best weight. That was like where he was like unbeatable at that weight.
Okay.
You know? Pernell Whitaker was also a 147-pound champion, but he really made his mark at lightweight.
I think 140 was his best, you know.
I think lightweight was his best weight.
He had more memorable fights, I think, at 140, didn't he?
Because he unified the championship. He unified the lightweight championship. He was one of the he was undisputed, wasn't he?
Yep, that's right.
And he wasn't undisputed at any other. He won titles, but he was never undisputed.
You're right.
And then he's regarded as, I guess, one of the best lightweights ever. which of course is why he's in the tournament. This is a tough fight to call. I want to hear your opinion on it, though. Who wins and why?
Man, this is pretty much even because they both could take shots, they both could move, they both threw lots of punches. I'll favor the boxer in this. I'll take Sweet Pea.
Okay, Sweet Pea by decision.
Yeah.
All right.
The only way there's a knockout here is if Mosley gets one.
Yeah. To me, this is a tough one to call. And while the two never met in the ring, I think we've seen this fight already. Believe it or not.
I think
this fight could very well look a lot like the Shane Mosley Floyd Mayweather fight.
Oh yeah, well that didn't look very good for Shane.
Both Whitaker and Mayweather were great at making adjustments during the fight, and they were both great. Both had excellent defense. Even though the fight took place past Mosley's prime, I still think the fight looks similar in Mosley's prime. To say that, I still think Floyd wins that fight.
Therefore Sweet Pea wins this one, right?
Well, I think the fact that he would be lighter for Whitaker makes the fight a little bit closer.
Okay.
And Whitaker and Mayweather do have different styles but similar styles. They're both focused on defense versus offense and everything like that. That's why I think that's a good measuring stick to how this fight would have went down. I think ultimately Whitaker's defense and his ability to make Mosley miss the shots pretty much tells a story in this fight.
Yep.
I'm taking Pernell Whitaker to win a very close decision.
Me too. This is a decision, very close. Probably 1 point on one. I could see somebody scoring. I could see one judge scoring this a draw, one judge scoring this for Mosley, and one judge, making 1 point decision or something for Whitaker. I can see it being really, really close.
Yeah, I can too. But for our purposes, it's a unanimous decision because the computer takes Whitaker also. Three judges score the fight for Pernell Whitaker. Pernell Whitaker moves on to the finals. Finals are now set. It will be Pernell, Sweet Pea Whitaker, the number 2 seed, versus Roberto Duran, the number 1 seed, to determine the best lightweight of all time.
And how often, when you put these tournaments together, do you ever see the number 1 finally meet up with the number 2?
Right. I mean, exactly. This was, I tell you what, the Mosley fight was a tough one, and I was leaning toward Mosley all week leading into this. And then I thought about it. I was like, okay, well, let's look at this a little bit closer now. And then I looked at that Floyd fight, and I said, would he have been any different? And I don't know that it would have been.
It would have been really interesting had you ever seen Whitaker and Mayweather actually step in the ring.
Well, remember, that was a fantasy fight. Remember, we had it as a fantasy fight, and it ended up a draw.
We
fought them like a number of times.
Yeah.
We ran through the computer a number of times.
Yeah, I think that's the only draw in this series we've ever had, right?
And I played, and like I said, you mess around the computer and stuff, and you say, okay, well, what about this and this, and you get different matches and, different outcomes and stuff like that. And that's the only draw ever, that we've ever really, really come up with, is Whitaker and Mayweather. And, it was like Whitaker won some, Mayweather won some, and then they drew a bunch of times. So it was definitely even.
There you go. No, and next week that'll be a contrast in styles. Wow,
it's a tough one, man. This is another tough one. Your gut instinct is on who to take, but then you think about it, you're like, well, that may not be so easy.
That's right.
That may not be so easy. So
no.
So yeah, definitely something to think about. And next week finals. So should be interesting. All right, let's move on to our news and rumors. Let's start with our train wreck of the week. We told you we're going to be talking about Frank Bruno. And,
well, here he is.
That's right. Former WBC heavyweight champion Frank Bruno has announced that he is going to make a comeback to boxing. Not as a manager, not as a trainer. He wants to box again. He wants to step in the ring competitively. That's right. He appeared on a popular talk show called This Morning. I guess it's popular in London because, I ain't never heard of it. Right. And said he wants to box again. The host asked him if he thought this was a good idea. Frank Bruno kind of got irritated at the host, apparently. He said, I haven't got no choice. I train every day, and I have all this energy to get out of my system. I've been in the gym all the time. That's why I want to make my comeback to boxing. As we reported a couple of months ago, Frank Bruno suffers from bipolar disorder. Apparently, he was actually hospitalized for this. He was supposed to be in an event at an event, and he was actually hospitalized for this, so he couldn't make the event. And then he got out, and everything's going well for him, and I'm really happy because that's a tough thing, man. That's a tough thing to deal with, you know. But apparently the meds they're giving him to deal with this disorder leave him, like, full of energy. I mean, so he said he feels like Superman. He said he's bouncing off the walls, basically, you know.
Well, heck, he wouldn't even pass the body drug test with all the medicine he's taking.
I said, you know, unless they're feeding you steroids, man, stay out of the ring, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Look at
Antonio Tarver. He failed the drug test twice because of steroids.
Right, exactly. So while I'm grateful that he's getting the upper hand on this bipolar disorder, man, I everybody fears for him coming back at 54 because I'll tell you, you know, it's not like he was a great boxer. Don't get me wrong. He was a great fighter, but he did take a lot of shots. He was known for taking a lot of punishment, man.
Yes, he did.
And, I don't want to see that, you know, and I'm not the only one who doesn't want to see it. The British Boxing Board actually doesn't want to see it either, and they're the ones that would be granting Bruno the license. They've informed Frank Bruno's agent today that they will not be granting him a boxing license. And
thank
congratulations
God.
For them, man. And they made the right choice. And I hope, you know, like I said, man, I hope Frank Bruno finds an outlet, and I think he will. Just being in the gym is a good outlet, you know, because he looks great for 54 years old. I mean, he looks better than I do, I tell you that. You know, he looks great. He's still shredded to the nines, you know. I mean, he just a great guy, man. I don't want to see anything happen to him, you know. I know he's a hero in Britain,
yep.
You know, so I don't want to see anything happen to him, so... I'm glad he's got the competitiveness back. Hopefully he can channel that in a different way and just be at peace with his life in another way. You know what I mean? So
hey, I hear you.
So, good deal, man.
Oh, and the rumor as far as the executioner is concerned, I hear that he wants to have his last fight at 168. We're talking about Bernard Hopkins. And he wants to fight for a 168-pound title.
On what basis?
I don't know.
You know on what basis? You haven't fought anybody.
Just
you've been
out
of the ring. Who was his last loss to? It was Kovalev, wasn't it?
Kovalev, right,
He last fought Kovalev. And you want to come back and get a title shot for what? What makes you think that? What? Yeah, I want a title shot too. Let me just jump in there and get a title shot. No.
But
it doesn't work that way.
No, I get you, Eric. I'm just telling you the rumor I've heard, okay?
Jumping all over
here.
Robert, boy.
Yeah.
Tell me that nonsense.
160. He wants, because, you know, he fought at 160 all those years, and then he jumped up to 175. He says, now I want to fight at 168. Remember, we're just talking about a guy that's 54, right?
Right.
Shouldn't be in the ring. Bernard Hopkins is my age. He's 51. You've had a wonderful career. Give up this idea. He's a co-promoter. He owns ownership in Golden Boy Promotions, and he does broadcasting for HBO. What the hell do you need to fight for?
Oh, well, you know he's going to target. He's going to target Arthur Abraham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
Come on, man.
I think that's who he's targeting. And
well, look who you got. You got IBF. You got James DeGale.
Right.
WBC. You got Badu Jack. You're not going to be either.
Jack.
Yeah, you're not going to beat either one of those guys.
No.
Fedor Chudinov in the WBA.
Right.
You know, and then you got Arthur Abraham on the WBO.
Well,
you know.
there's no guarantee that Arthur Abraham is going to beat Gilberto Ramirez.
Yeah, that's going to be a fight right there. Yeah,
And
I'm favoring Ramirez in that one, to be honest, man. So what do you do? I mean, not to mention you can't fight Badu Jack. You can't fight James DeGale. Your only options are the WBO and the WBA.
Yeah, and look. Like I said, there's no guarantee that Arthur Abraham, because I think Ramirez is going to win that fight. That's on the undercard of Pacquiao Bradley. I think Ramirez will win that fight. I think Bernard has lost his mind here. Okay.
I do too. It's done, son. Hang it up.
Yeah.
It's over for you.
Did Kovalev take too many of your brain cells or what? You know,
and what do you have left to prove? I mean, Kovalev dominated that fight. That fight wasn't even close.
No.
I mean, you were hard-pressed to give Hopkins a round in that fight.
Hell, the first punch of the fight, Hopkins goes down. Remember that?
Yeah.
You know? And when I seen that, I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to end real quick. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and like, yeah, man, good for Bernard Hopkins. But, man, who are you to just say, you know, he's ranked number 7. You know, he was ranked number, let me see here if I can find that again. He was ranked number 7 in the WBA, right behind Sullivan Barrera.
Yeah.
And then let me see if he's ranked in the WBO. He's not even ranked in the WBO.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to suggest this, but Bernard could actually be a tune-up fight for Ward. You know, say Ward beats Barrera, which we all expect him to do. Yeah, I could see HBO saying, okay, Bernard, you want one more fight? We're going to give you Andre Ward.
Oh, Ward will kill that guy. My God.
Absolutely he would.
Yeah, I mean, again, man, he's ranked number 7 in the WBA at 175, right?
Yeah.
All right, he's ranked number 7. I don't see him ranked anywhere else.
Now, why the hell do you still have him ranked? How long ago was the Kovalev fight?
Yeah, well, not that. Yeah, that's even beside the point. But again, it's WBA. You know? So what? So he says, "Hey, I want a title fight in the WBO," mm-hmm. or because again, realistically, he's got the WBA or the WBO. Because
right.
Fedor Chudinov is at the WBA champion, and then Arthur Abraham is the WBO champion.
Right.
Those are really his only two realistic options because the other two fight for Heyman. You know, so what? You're ranked number 7 at 175, so you think you can just drop down X amount of pounds and then just get a title shot?
Yeah, that, I mean,
and just jump over these guys?
Hey, that's the rumor I hear.
No, Eric, I believe it, but I mean, I think it's just garbage, though, you know?
Yeah. So, I'm sorry to bring this up, but in case you had more, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at like Jesse Hart, okay, 168, WBO. Jesse Hart's ranked number 3. Why would you get a? I mean, why would you get a title fight before that guy? Jesse Hart's a great fighter, man.
Yes, he is.
The up and comer, man. And then you know, just ridiculous, man. That's just ridiculous.
Just
ridiculous.
Because your name is Bernard Hopkins,
yeah,
you know
that nobody wants. I don't want to see him fight again. I mean,
no.
Look,
he's had a Hall of Fame career. He will always be remembered for being a dominating middleweight champion. You know, I mean. Not very many people can defend their title 20 consecutive times. I mean, he's got a Hall of Fame resume. He doesn't need to do this.
No, and you know, like, I tell you, it used to be the when Bernard Hopkins, you know, was a little bit older, like when he fought Calzaghe. You know, I picked Calzaghe to win that fight because Calzaghe you knew was going to be busier. You knew he was going to be in his face and going to be busier. And that was the key to beating Bernard Hopkins.
That's correct.
Now, Sergey Kovalev was busier, but not Calzaghe busy. You know what I mean? Kovalev fought his normal fight.
Well, Sergey knew that he didn't have to be as busy as Joe was because Bernard's a lot older.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he basically considered Bernard not a serious threat.
Right. Right. And, I mean, and that's just disheartening. I mean, that's some of the things that are wrong with boxing, to be honest, man, because you got guys like Jesse Hart who deserve that shot. And then it's not fair for, you know, Hopkins to leapfrog him.
Yeah.
You
well,
know? Why don't you fight Jesse Hart? Why don't you fight Jesse Hart? Let's see. Let's figure that out.
Frankly, I don't want to see him fight anymore. He's fought enough.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, look, I mean, you still got to earn your spot. And you could say, well, I'm a Hall of Fame fighter and this and that, but look, you have not earned your spot. You can't earn your spot. You can't. You just lost. You just fought for a title and lost.
Yeah, Sergey Kovalev beat you from pillar to post,
you know? Mm. Right. I mean, yeah, that wasn't even close, man.
No, I scored that 12-0. I didn't give Bernard Hopkins a round.
Yeah.
And I've never scored a fight without giving Bernard Hopkins rounds.
Yeah, Bernard Hopkins, man, I mean, he's always one that's going to get, you know, he always makes you fight his fight, but this day's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man.
No, he's like an overripe big potato, man, in the microwave too long.
That's right.
It's done.
That's
right. Yeah. Do you have anything else there?
Yeah, Andre Ward and Sullivan Barrera is just about official March 26th in Oakland from what we're hearing.
Yep. That's right.
That should be a good fight, man. Sullivan Barrera is a pretty good fighter, so that should be a decent, decent fight. I still think Andre Ward wins pretty easily, but it should be a pretty good test.
Of course he does. And the arena will be at least half empty. Andre Ward does not sell out his own hometown arena. What can I say?
Man, sounds like Cincinnati, man. All right, so check this out. This was good, and this caught my attention because this was funny. Okay. Billy Joe Saunders was at the Arsenal game this weekend, all right? That's Premier League soccer over in England. And he claimed that, you know, he wanted to fight Triple G or Chris Eubank Jr. You just got offered, like, $4 million to fight Triple G, and you turned it down. And now you're on TV saying that you want to fight. Get out of here. You want to fight him. Come on, man. Really?
Look, Billy, if you wanted to fight him, sign the contract and get your butt in the ring.
Right. Get $4 million and get paid for it. And then, you know, you're going to make a lot more money fighting Triple G than you will Chris Eubank. You know, so Chris Eubank Jr., he's already beaten. Yeah. They already fought. He beat him. So what do you need to call out Chris Eubank Jr. for again? That doesn't make any sense.
No.
You know, now speaking of things that don't make any sense, Mike Alvarado and Juan Diaz are set to make their returns on March 19th in Houston.
Yeah, now look, I haven't seen Diaz fight for several years. He was a good fighter. I don't know what he's got left, and I don't know what to say about Mile High. Every time he gets in the ring, he looks horrible. Somebody should not give him a boxing license.
Who would you rather see in the ring, Frank Bruno or Mike Alvarado?
Neither one.
All right, Floyd Mayweather, Money May. You know what? I think I'm coming around to your logic of thing, your line of thinking, man. I guarantee Floyd Mayweather will fight a 50th fight because he cannot continue to spend money at this rate.
because. Every week since he had his last fight last September, we've had a Mayweather story, and most of them have involved ridiculous amounts of money. He's coming to fight again. Listen to this. Go ahead, Eric.
All right. Floyd Mayweather is dropping $3.5 million on a new car. The car apparently is a 2017 Bugatti Chiron. And it reportedly goes 288 miles an hour, and as you know, the speed limit is, what, 65 now? So
I think it's 75 now.
Yeah, there you go. $3.5 million. What's an average car called? What an average car is like 25,000, right?
And keep this in mind. That's not the most expensive car that he owns. He's got one that's $5 million. $5 million. Give me a break.
$5 million for a car? Come on,
man. Yeah.
And it goes, like I said, man, 280. When are you going to go 288 miles an hour?
When are you getting on the NASCAR circuit?
Right? Yeah. We went, about a couple of years ago. Our in-laws had bought us a NASCAR package, because there's like a Kentucky, we're by the Kentucky Speedway.
That's correct.
So
yeah.
They have like a NASCAR thing or whatever, where you purchase tickets or whatever, and then you can get into cars while a driver drives you around at like their top speeds or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not, you know, I own a Prius, so I don't ever go like top speed with anything. You know what I mean?
It
wasn't like my cup of tea, and I'm like, I'm just kind of scared to get in the car anyway. I'm wondering, I'm not driving it, so I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to drive a stick anyway. I don't know what I'm doing, you know.
Right.
I'm just sitting in the passenger seat praying, you know. And so I'm looking around like, I'm like, man. And this guy has got this car going, and we start going around the track, and he's just flying.
Who was the driver, Eric?
It was just a regular driver. It wasn't like a NASCAR guy or anything. Like, he was just guy that worked there. I know he was a driver, but he wasn't like a NASCAR, you know, driver type thing. But it was a NASCAR type of car, you know.
Okay, I got you.
And, I mean, he was just flying around this track, man. And I would say through about 50% of the ride, I've got my eyes closed. And it was only, I mean, I think they went around there like two or three laps or something like that. And I've got my eyes closed, just hoping we don't crash into a wall or something like that, you know. And, I mean, he was going, I think, I think they said he had it going up to like 160 miles an hour.
Right, and that's like not even a top speed for a NASCAR.
No. I mean it was like 160 or something like that. Yeah. Which I regularly reach in my Prius anyway.
I would have done that at least once. That's cool.
It was very cool. I mean, it was very cool. Like once you get in there and you're like you kind of settle down and everything like that. It was very cool. Very cool experience. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things that you're kind of glad you got to have that experience, you know.
Right.
But 160, I think it was about 160 miles an hour or something like that. I can't imagine. This car goes 288 miles an hour. How can you control that thing going 288, man? That's crazy.
The only car that goes faster, Eric, that I know of, and I'm not a racing expert, but the drag racing, some of those cars, because of the jet fuel, they get over 300. He's coming back to fight. I mean, my God, every week we've done a story on Mayweather dropping loads of cash.
Just tons of cash, $3.5 million on a car. You can't even go that fast. What's the point of getting a car to go that you can't even go that fast?
I don't know. That's ridiculous.
I tell you what, we must sound our age now, man, because we're talking about driving too fast, you know?
Well, hey, I've never had that experience because I can't drive anyway, so, you know.
All right, now, talking about we're talking about basketball earlier. You're talking about the arena where the Golden State
Warriors
are?
Oracle Arena. That's where the fight's going to be held for Andre Ward, yeah.
Let's talk about that other basketball team in California, the L.A. Clippers. I think there's a couple of them, I guess.
Yeah, we have four of them. We have Golden State, the Warriors, the defending champions, the L.A. Clippers, the L.A. Lakers, and the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, good for you guys. You got four teams out there. Yay. Well, California gets everything, you know?
Frankly, we only need about two. You know?
Blake Griffin, who plays for the L.A. Clippers, apparently got in an altercation with the assistant equipment manager for the Clippers.
Yes, he did. In Toronto, when they were in Toronto about a week or two ago.
I don't know what the fight was about. I don't understand how you could get into a fight with the equipment manager, though. He's the star of the team. How do you get in a fight with equipment? What, did he lay out your shoes? I mean, what was this all about? You know,
I don't know. And it happened in a public place. They were in a Toronto restaurant having dinner.
Yeah, so I heard. It was out, man.
Yeah.
Well, Deontay Wilder got wind of this. That apparently it was Matias Testi, who was the equipment manager, who was actually punched by Blake Griffin. Deontay Wilder got wind of this and said he offered to actually train the equipment manager to fight Griffin.
Well, and the ironic thing about it is Blake Griffin broke his hand. He broke his hand. You know? And mind you, for those that don't follow NBA basketball, Blake Griffin is 6'10" tall.
You know what, though? They don't know how to fight, though. You ever see, like, a basketball fight? Like, they brawl out on there and they start throwing punches?
Yeah.
They can't fight. They can't throw a punch to save their life.
No. One punch, he broke his hand. And he was already injured. He was about ready to come back.
Dummy.
Because he had recovered from his original injury. Now he's out another 4 to 6 weeks, and the NBA and the Clippers are looking at, when he's eligible to play, whether he should be suspended for beating up one of their employees.
You donkey. What an idiot. I mean, why? Like I said, again, why are you punching the equipment manager for anyway? He's not even a pro athlete.
That reminds me of Johnny Manziel continuing to beat up on women. Because Manziel did that again this weekend in Texas.
Did he really? I heard there was helicopters and everything going on.
Yeah, they were searching for him. They had dogs out and everything.
He beat up a girl or something?
Yeah, he beat up one of his ex-girlfriends. Domestic violence.
Wow. Yeah, I read something about it. I didn't know. I just glanced over the article when it said, like, copters looking for Johnny Manziel or whatever. I'm like, that guy's nuts, man.
He's
out of Cleveland. One of the stipulations was, what's that coach's name again?
Hugh Jackson.
Hugh Jackson. One of the stipulations.
The former Cincinnati offensive coordinator.
I know, and they trade him to go to Cleveland. They let him go to Cleveland. I can't believe that. But
he didn't want to go to San Francisco, so he
I don't know, which I don't understand, man. Playing in Levi's Stadium and everything like that. Frisco seems like a choice, a nice place to live, and
very expensive
Frisco's
place to
beautiful,
live.
Beautiful, man. Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he said, I thought I heard one of the stipulations for him going to Cleveland was that Manziel wasn't going to be the quarterback. So,
well, get this. Hugh Jackson has contacted all the players to introduce himself. The only one he cannot get in touch with is Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel is avoiding all of his calls.
Yeah, nice. Wow.
Johnny Manziel and Blake Griffin and all these other people, they could have been our train wreck of the week, but we picked out a good one. Thank you, Frank. Right.
There you go. Yeah, no doubt, man.
Yeah.
All right, so that's pretty much it for the boxing, man. Let's switch gears here, and we're going to talk about football for a little bit here. We're going to do a Super Bowl preview.
Speaking of Levi's Stadium, we got a heck of a matchup here. We got the Carolina Panthers against the Denver Broncos. Sunday afternoon, the game will probably start about 6:30 Eastern time on CBS.
On CBS, Super Bowl 50. Super Bowl 50, the golden Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know, the big spot.
I'll be glad once it's over, because that way we won't have to see that gold logo in the middle of the, on the 50 or whatever. Because I thought that was terrible, man. I thought that was just terrible.
Yeah.
And so Lisa's joining us for this segment here because she likes football. That's her favorite sport. She doesn't know much about it. But
come on.
You know, it is what it is, you know.
Lisa, he's picking on you again.
All right. So let's see here. Hang on one second here. All right. Can you still hear me?
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
Perfect. All right. I was told to unplug the headphones so everybody can hear. So here
we
go.
Well, that's a good idea.
Not for me. I mean, you know, I don't care if she hears it or not.
Oh, come on, Eric. I swear you're working on sleeping on the couch, aren't you?
For the fifth day in a row. How about that? You know, exactly. All right, so let's talk about our Super Bowl preview here. Super Bowl 50, Carolina is favored by 5.5 points at most sports books. Is this fair?
I've seen the line as high as 6.
Me too.
Yeah. I think Carolina is the clear-cut favorite here. To be honest with you, I would have much rather seen Carolina play the Patriots because I think this would have been a more competitive game, because you've got a crippled, almost 40-year-old Peyton Manning, playing quarterback for Denver. I don't, everybody wants to see Peyton go out and win his last game and retire as a champion, but I don't see Denver doing much against the Carolina defense. I think Carolina wins this one going away.
Well, what about the Denver defense? They're ranked number 1 in the NFL.
Well, see, that's what I like about this game is you have the number 1 and the number 2 defenses.
Yeah, I think it's going to be – I think it's – you know, do you think it's a high-scoring game? The over-under is 45, 45.5.
I think it's going to be close to that. I don't know if it goes over that, but I think Carolina does most of the scoring here.
I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as one-sided as people think it's going to be. I think Denver's defense is pretty amazing. And I don't know. I don't think the Patriots would have been a better matchup. Half their team is hurt.
Yeah. But, Lisa, what kind of game do you expect Denver's offense to play with a guy that's basically crippled these days?
I don't know. It depends. He is capable of an amazing game that you can't believe he can play, and he's capable of an amazingly bad game. So it's kind of – I don't know. I have a really hard time with this one.
Yeah.
I think with me, you have to go with the people that have done it all year. Consistently, and Cam Newton has been consistent all year. I would love to see. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to see Denver win. I would love to see the storybook ending with Peyton Manning and everything. Problem is, it's just not going to happen, man. I think that Cam Newton he's been on all year. And I tell you that the one game, it was before their loss to Atlanta, and I can't remember who they were playing, but they really had to fight for that game, for that win. You know, they had to go into overtime to get it. I think it was
Tampa Bay, wasn't it?
Maybe so. It was one of those where they really had to claw for that win. And you could tell they had to come back. Maybe it was New Orleans. I think it might have been New Orleans.
It could have been one of those.
And that New Orleans was up. They were up most of the game, and then it was back and forth, and then they ended up winning it. But they really had to dig down deep to win that game, and they did. You know, and then they went back and they lost to Atlanta and everything like that. But they have been the more consistent team overall all year. Now, you can argue that Denver's played tougher teams, but
Carolina had the easier schedule. Sure. I think the only chance Denver really has to win this game is if Carolina turns the ball over and they return a fumble or interception for a touchdown or something, or you have a special teams play. I don't see Denver's offense doing very much against Carolina's defense.
Denver's offense or Denver's offense isn't going to be able to do much, but I think their defense is good enough to keep them in the game.
I hope you're right.
I mean, they intercepted Tom Brady, what, four times?
Yeah.
In that game? Tom Brady's not one to throw a lot of interceptions.
He had a horrible offensive line, too.
Oh, for sure. Oh, my gosh. Their offensive line was terrible in that game and the game before that, frankly.
Yeah.
I don't know. And you never know, too. It's Cam Newton's first Super Bowl.
Yep.
You never quite know how a guy's going to react for that, but he is a special player. I've never seen a quarterback like him before.
Yeah, no, he's going to become the prototypical NFL quarterback, 6'5", 250 pounds, and who can run and throw and take hits as well as he does.
I don't know about prototypical, though. There's been a lot of guys who have tried to say they were going down that path there's never been somebody who could pass the way he can pass put all the other stuff together.
No,
he is a special player for sure.
Yeah.
Well, look at Michael Vick. Michael Vick was supposed to be that guy too. I mean, or Ron Mexico, whichever one you want to call him.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be that guy too, you know, and, you know, he was for a while, but then again, injury and dog fighting and stuff like that.
Yeah, he got involved with dogs, had to spend some time in jail, you know.
Well, Colin Kaepernick was another running quarterback that people acted like would be able to be such a passer. And not that he's not a talented guy, but he's not Cam Newton. He's not.
What happened to Colin Kaepernick?
Injuries, because he's not this massive guy like Cam Newton is. I mean,
I think Kaepernick will now make a comeback because Chip Kelly's going to run the kind of offense that he's going to work well in. The coach they had last year didn't know anything about handling a quarterback, and I mean, that's why he got hurt so bad. He was never put in situations where he could do anything. It's going to be a good game, but if I had to pick anybody, I think Carolina wins their first Super Bowl, and Peyton Manning ends his career, you know.
I see, and I don't know. I don't want to say I don't think Peyton's going to retire, but I would not be surprised at all to see him next year, especially if they lose this game. And my heart wants to see him win. I was never a big Peyton Manning fan, to be honest with you, but this is one of the few Super Bowls I've really felt like I don't think the underdog has a chance. I hate to say it, but I think the Broncos are going to lose this one.
Yep. Eric, it sounds like it's unanimous here.
Absolutely. It's my 5-star parlay of the year, son.
Yeah.
Take Carolina and the points, all right? Bet the farm on Carolina.
Bet the under. That's crazy.
Bet the farm. I tell you what, if you don't have any money, take your mother, sell her, all right? Bet whatever you can on Carolina because they're rolling this week. 5.5 points, take them. 6 points, take them. 10 points, take them. It's a blowout. Carolina wins huge by 2 touchdowns. You heard it here first.
I hope the halftime show is worth it. That's all I can say.
Yeah, Beyonce's in a halftime show. You know it's going to be worth it.
It's Beyonce and Coldplay, and I forget who else they've got working with them.
Yeah, I was for Coldplay. I mean, that's what I was. No, I mean, because she does real well with Coldplay. That's what I was talking about. I wasn't talking about, like, Beyonce's there, so I'm going to watch the show. You know what I mean? All right. So, also, too, now Cam Newton. Now, check this out. Check this stat out. Cam Newton could become the first quarterback to win the national championship, the Heisman, and the Super Bowl. I'm surprised that hasn't been done.
No other quarterback in the 50 years of the Super Bowl has ever done that.
But hey, the Broncos have clothing on their side. The Broncos are 0-4 all time wearing their orange jerseys in the Super Bowl. White jerseys against the Panthers in Super Bowl 50. The Panthers will wear their black uniforms. They wore white when they lost to the Patriots in Super Bowl 28, looks like, in 2004. Yeah. 38, I'm sorry. 38. See, this is why I got you here. You're a mathematician. You can read Roman numerals where I can't read them. You know what I mean?
All right.
10 of the last Super Bowl winners, 10 of the last 11, were wearing white uniforms.
Okay.
How about that?
Cool.
Now, the winning player, the players on the winning teams will receive up to a $97,000 bonus, while the players on the losing team will receive $49,000. Still a big chunk of change, man.
Yeah.
Vontaze Burfict was fine this year.
Yeah, right. All right. And not to brag here or anything like that. All right, not to brag.
Okay.
But Ohio State is the most well-represented college in the Super Bowl. There are five. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Buckeyes. Bradley Roby on the Broncos. Ted Ginn Jr., Kurt Coleman, Philly Brown, and Andrew Norwell on the Panthers. And I know Andrew Norwell's sister. Work with her. Nice. Very nice person.
Okay.
So, Ohio State.
Ew.
Repping in the Super Bowl, son. You want to play football? You want to play it at a high level? You come through Ohio. That's the way we do it here.
Yep. Well, Wednesday is National Signing Day, by the way.
That's right. Yeah. So very good, man. So looks like we're all taking Carolina, even you. How do you think Peyton does? I'm gonna ask Lisa here because Peyton's her favorite player, or one of her favorites. You know.
Well, hey, Eric, you weren't listening. She said earlier she wasn't really a Peyton fan.
See, thanks for pointing that out, Robbie. Because I always get accused of not listening. In fact, it was just this afternoon I got accused of not listening. You know.
Well, and I just proved your point.
Falsely, definitely falsely. You can see her point.
Yeah, because she clearly just said a couple of minutes ago she's not a Peyton Manning fan.
Pretty much not.
You're not a Peyton Manning fan?
No.
Since when?
Always. I've always said he chokes.
You
well,
love
he
Peyton
Manning. Well, he doesn't. Hey.
Listen, let me tell you something. I paid $30. We're going here. All right, so we had this this travel sports. We have the travel sports show or whatever. I told you we bought the beads for $30. Well, one of the beads that we bought were from Icky Woods, who I love Icky Woods, but he's overcharging everybody.
He does great commercials, but that's about
right,
it.
That's about it, you know.
Yeah.
It's for a charity in his son's name. His son died of asthma.
Yeah, okay. Hey, I know what that's like. I've got a son that's got asthma, so.
You know, yeah, but look at Robbie. Robbie's not over there charging $30 for beads.
No.
Well, he's also not Mickey Woods.
No, I'm not. No.
He's Frank Side Robert. It's even better.
Yeah.
Everybody knows
his
name.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Anyway, go ahead with your story, Eric.
Well, I'm just saying that, you know, we paid $30 for these beads, and one of the beads that she purchased was the Denver Broncos.
Antonio picked those out.
Whatever. You let him pick them out, all right? He picked out the 49ers, too. He didn't pick them, you know.
He wasn't allowed to get the 49ers.
He wasn't, yeah. No. Pittsburgh and the 49ers, no.
He could have gotten the Raiders. I would have been happy with that.
Yeah, Raiders, yeah. Now, what's this? Okay, now, we heard the Raiders are looking to move to Nevada. Is that right? Las Vegas?
So we're going to continue our NFL discussion for those that want to hear boxing.
We got no more boxing to talk about, buddy. This is it, you know.
Yeah, well, here's the story going on with the NFL. Everybody knows now that the St. Louis Rams are going back to L.A. They're going to play in the L.A. Coliseum. The NFL has given an option to the San Diego Chargers to join them in L.A. And they have, 1 or 2 years to do this. On Friday, the Chargers said that they're going to play their 2016 schedule in San Diego, and they're going to try and work out a deal with the people in San Diego to build a new stadium. But the owner of the Chargers is not going to give up his option to go to L.A. because, see, the minute he gives up that option, the Raiders will move right in and take their spot because the Raiders are second on that list. So Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, has had to look around for places to play because the Raiders don't even have a lease to play in Oakland this year. The whole football team is basically a free agent. They're trying to find a place to play this year, and they want to make whatever place they choose, they want to make it their permanent home. So that's what's going on with the Raiders, and there's several options. They could share the stadium with the 49ers. They could replace the Chargers in San Diego if San Diego does finally go to L.A.
Which is silly. Why would you move out of there and then put another team right there?
Yeah, well, because Dean Spanos has been a jerk with the city of San Diego for the last 15 years. He's been demanding a new stadium and making all kinds of demands, and I think the city of San Diego is tired of dealing with him, and I think they'd be more open to deal with somebody else.
We heard a rumor, and you could tell us, I mean, you'd be better to tell us if there's any truth to this or not. Is there any truth to the rumor that the Oakland Raiders will be moving to Dogpatch, Kentucky?
No. Although, Eric, at this point, Mark Davis is looking. I mean, he's also talking to the city of Las Vegas. He's talking to the city of San Antonio. He's trying to explore his options.
Las Vegas, they've been talking about pro teams for a long, long time. The ones that they were looking at were NBA and hockey, because
right.
that rotates on the year basis. They can have sports all year round there. But
right.
why, I mean, it seems like professional franchises, you know, talk about it, but they never end up in Vegas, and which, you know, it seems to be like it would be a good town, but I don't know.
Well, I don't know if the NFL would want to get involved there because of the gambling.
Yeah.
I don't know that they would be a good town anyway. I mean, there's such a... It's such a tourist attraction. Certainly there's lots of locals that live there, but there's so much else going on, so many other places to spend your entertainment dollars. I think it'd be hard to support a professional team there.
Yeah, I do too, but Raider fans, they travel. Every time the Raiders go somewhere, their fans show up. They're like the Packers and the Steelers.
Yeah.
Every time the Steelers and Packers go somewhere, it seems like half of their fans follow them, you know. And the Raiders are kind of the same way. Like this year when they played in San Diego, there was more Raider fans in the stands than there were Charger fans.
Yeah.
You know.
I do think that, like you said, the gambling would be a big issue. I'm not sure it actually would be an issue, but I'm not sure it's something any professional franchise is going to want to actually deal with or be associated with so much.
No, and see, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, was going to help the Raiders with building this new stadium in Vegas, because they needed a football stadium for their college team. So the university was actually going to help with some of the expenses. That's one of the reasons why Davis went and had a meeting with the city of Las Vegas. They've got 42 acres of land set aside for this place to be built near the University of Nevada, Las Vegas campus. So I don't know. I feel bad because it's my team, and looks like I might be losing them for a second time, you know?
Yeah, we still got the world champion.
Warriors.
The Warriors, yeah. You still got them guys out there. I think that, you know, it's funny because you got, like, with Nevada, man, the UNLV is like their pro team, you know? It's kind of like when you go to Tennessee, you see nothing but UT there everywhere. You know, that's almost like their team. You know, you see orange and white everywhere.
Yeah.
And I remember being out in Vegas the one time, we were talking to somebody out there, and he said that that's kind of like, you know, he said he didn't think a pro team would survive out there just because of that dynamic, because that's their team. You know, the UNLV is like their team, you know.
No, I don't know if we'll ever see the day where a pro franchise, whether it be hockey, basketball, or football, I don't think we'll ever see a professional team there. I mean, they support minor league baseball real well. They support the college real well, but of course they show up for fights. But I don't know if they would show up for something on a weekly or everyday basis, you know, depending on the sport.
Yeah, they have the 51s down there. That's their minor league team or whatever. And then they have, or at least they used to be called the 51s. I'm not sure if they are still, but
I think they still are. They're affiliated now with the New York Mets.
And then, like I said, that and UNLV, and then they got the fights. You know, they got the UFC down there. UFC is kind of like their franchise, and then, of course, all the boxing comes through there.
Right.
And big fight taking place in Vegas.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, they have a lot of, you know, they kind of have pro sports down there, but they don't have, like, their own team, you know.
Yeah, well, the Raiders have to decide where they're going to play by March 23rd because beginning of April is when the new schedule comes out. For the year. So that's why they're scouting around. And also, I don't know if you heard today, but NBC and CBS and the NFL Network are going to be dividing up the Thursday night football package. A new deal has been put in place. It's a 2-year deal. CBS is going to pay $450 million. NBC is going to pay $450 million. And what's going to happen is CBS will have 5 games. NBC will have 5 games. And then the NFL Network will have the leftover 7.
I don't know, man. I'm never a big fan of Thursday. I think they oversaturated doing that, man. I like the Monday. I like the Sunday and the Monday, and that's it.
Because Monday night sucks. The NFL is not going to turn down a cash grab. Like, for example, right. tonight, Monday night, because we're recording this on Monday, guys. Tonight on Monday on the NFL Network, the media day is becoming a brand new prime time event. From now on, whenever they have a Super Bowl, the media day will be on a Monday because they're going to show this from now on the NFL Network. You're going to get to see all the stuff live.
That's insane. Yeah, I heard about this too. Yeah, that the media day is going to be at 9 p.m. or something like that.
8 p.m. Eastern, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Craziness, man. Just crazy.
Yeah. So, and there's over 1 million people showing up to San Francisco this week just for the Super Bowl.
I heard Levi Stadium is a beautiful stadium, man. I heard they have all, like, the latest stuff in there and everything like that. I heard it's really nice.
Oh, yeah, and, I just read an article today in the USA Today where I didn't realize this, but part of the agreement for the 49ers to have Levi Stadium was not only for them to have the Super Bowl here this year, but they've got it set up automatically for a second team to come in there. So eventually, the 49ers are going to have somebody eventually to share their stadium with.
Really?
I didn't realize that was part of the agreement for them to get the stadium, but because it was brought up around here in one of the,
why don't the Raiders just share that? They're right across the bay.
Because I don't know why.
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't understand what's going on here, but that would solve the Raiders' problem.
Right, and they could stay right there in Oakland.
Yeah, yeah. They'd be across the bay, but yeah, I get your point. They'd be like 30 minutes away from their original stadium, and like I said, fans show up. So
yeah, I mean that's nothing, man. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know what's going on, but it's a fluid situation. But it's supposed to be resolved by the end of next month, so we'll see.
Yeah, very good, man. Very good. That'll wrap it up, man. That'll wrap up our Super Bowl preview here. And that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert, or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 773-572-7781. And listen to all the podcasts and history lessons. I'm at Ringside 73, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.